This is GamesAtWork.biz with Michael Martin and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 303, Art Imitates Life. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Michael Rowe here on a kind of dreary-looking day, but it is our first episode back in 2021, and I'm here with my friend and co-host, Michael Martin. Michael, how are you?
I am doing well on this wintry mix kind of a day here in
North Carolina. Getting any wintry mix? Nothing here yet.
No, I mean, it's rainy, it's gray-y, it's chill-a, so... We'll see, but we're warm inside, and we are...
Are you glad that you are inside?
Yeah.
Chill A?
Chill A? Chill A fresh?
A-R?
Perhaps so. So welcome, everybody, and Happy New Year, or Happy Old Year, depending upon how long you're listening to this in the future. You can't be listening to this in the past, can you? Because we're just recording it now.
Unless time travel is going to happen, and if so, it already has.
Yes, which could be. You never know. A lot of quantum stuff going on here in the world. We have got a show and a half to try to somehow
squeeze into a
small amount of time for you today. And I think to get things started... we've got a couple of stories about what has happened just 4.5 hours to the north of us here in the United States this week. It's the story of what's happened in Washington, D.C. is weighing, I'm sure, on many, many, many people's minds. And we've got a couple of articles here that were intriguing about it that I wanted to call out. And I know you did too, Michael. So the first of them.
And the good news to stay in line with our format, they're technology and gaming related.
Exactly. starting off with the first note or the first article from the Washington Post, the subject of this one is the Capitol mob recorded its own history, and now volunteers are trying to preserve the record. So there was a phrase somewhere about, and this article starts with it, the revolution will be televised. And it wasn't in this case. There were so many people that were live streaming their data and sharing on various social platforms and all over the internets on many of these different platforms, some of which are designed and some of which you are certainly allowed and can delete your content from relatively quickly. And in the euphoria of the moment, with as much collateral and material as was available, video, audio, text, you name it, there's been an effort by volunteers all over the world to collect, aggregate, store, save what went down in the Capitol building and to preserve it for posterity and for prosecution.
That's right. And what's really interesting to me, and I can't remember the name of the product, but Microsoft had a product years ago where they took and combined, you know, millions and millions of images to give you a very detailed event experience.
Oh, that's right.
Stitching those all together that allowed you to zoom in down to the face level with high resolution based off of all the overlapping images. Well, that same type of technology exists in video. You can stream all those together, right? Pull that in. Mm-hmm. Using machine learning and other analytics, you'll be able to get really, really nice...
crisp detail.
Crisp images of people doing things that was completely unacceptable, right? As you say... it's not just for history, it's for prosecution too, and I hope they prosecute.
But remember us talking a while ago too, Michael, about the historical overlay of pictures? We were talking about time travel a little bit, right? So we've had that here before too, where you take a picture of a location and look at it over time. So it'll be interesting to see if some of those, that art form, you know, takes this to task as well. You can imagine what this environment looked like in the 1960s and what it looked like this week on the 6th of January.
And I've already seen many different news sites publishing photographs and clips to try to help in the prosecution those people who broke the law,
right?
Who ransacked a building, who threatened the country. So,
yeah.
But speaking of that, how did they get there?
You know,
that's the thing that gets me. And there was a really interesting article written by Rabbit Rabbit back in September that talks about how the designers or the people behind QAnon use many of the same approaches and techniques that we use in gaming to engage people, and not only engage them, but to get them to change their thoughts or behaviors. And what this article, it's a pretty long read, but just to kind of summarize it, there's a method in gaming where you lay out clues that are somewhat so obvious that people think, well, that can't be the real clue, right? And you use this technique to get people to have their own aha moments, mm-hmm. and buy into the story, and to continue to buy into the story, taking them further and further down a certain path in a game. And it happens a lot in ARGs, right? Alternate reality games, LARPs, any type of interactive theater or quote, serious games. The idea is to leave a set of breadcrumbs that will make people have their own aha moments directly down the path you want to lead them. And this article goes in really, really well written, deep article on how much of that same exact behavior is used in QAnon and other organizations like that, to where you end up believing the lie and ignoring the truth and purposely disbelieving the proof because you didn't the truth because you didn't discover the truth, right? When you discover the thing, you take ownership of that. And so
and
by
it's dopamine based too,
yeah,
right?
It's a dopamine drip, little tiny drips, and by leading people down there, you can get people to do some really crazy stuff. And I think, you know, this was a September article. Where we ended up this week was much further than that. But, you know, you looked at some of the videos and some of the pictures, and people look like they're playing dress up, right? They came in costume, quote unquote, quote, to live their fantasy of whatever they were doing to save the world from the evil people, right? It's scary how well this game design technique mirrors, or I should say, how well QAnon and other conspiracy teams mirror the stuff that we use for things like creating a great game experience. Highly recommend you read it. Not going to go through the whole thing here, obviously. Like I said, it's about a half hour read, but highly recommend it.
Yep. Very, very interesting. And the alternate reality game experience is certainly an interesting parallel here too, because that is a way to get people, you know, into that headspace, that gameplay environment, and has many of the characteristics of what you just described. Right.
Yep.
Turning to a slightly different approach, but still something incredibly significant, and lots of news on this story too. It's around the SolarWinds hack, and I'd seen plenty that related to what happened in the Capitol building about needing to sweep and potentially destroy every bit of technology that's out there because you don't know what has potentially been infected, where there might be bugs, all kinds of stuff like that. But the SolarWinds hack actually happened well in advance of this. And this article from The Verge is suggesting that it may be a whole lot worse than what was originally thought.
Yeah, and there's actually, you know, one of my favorite security podcasts is Security Now. Steve mm-hmm. Gibson from Gibson Research does a really good job of going through this. And this past week, he walked through, actually the last couple of episodes, they've gone through the details of SolarWinds. And the thing that I worry about, and the reason why I wanted this one in here, is not to go into the details of SolarWinds. We are not going to be able to go at the level of expertise.
Yep.
But what I worry about is the fallout. Right. One of the best things you can do traditionally from a security perspective in the IT world is keep your software updated.
Right.
Keep it updated. Mm-hmm. Because as breaches and security flaws are uncovered, they're not going to go back and retroactively fix them in old versions of stuff. They fix it in the new version. So one of the reasons why you want to turn on auto updates on your phone, on your laptop, you know, various apps that are critical, etc.
Your gaming platforms that make fried chicken?
Absolutely. And so what I worry about, though, is the people who broke into SolarWinds actually use the update feature to spread and corrupt the update feature. And the knee-jerk reaction that I worry about is that people enterprises, individuals will say, oh, well, see, here's this one data point. Back to QAnon, right? Here's this one data point that shows you shouldn't do your updates. And so it really worries me. The implications of this attack are so far-reaching, and reminds me one of the things when we were watching the events unfold on Wednesday was the thought, and my wife brought this up, that who's to say there aren't Russian agents in that crowd?
Yeah.
From a security perspective, right?
Yeah.
And then you think about that. Now. You think of the data that was retrieved through the SolarWinds hack and the systems that were hacked into and broken into. And you go back to that and you put it. Here's another conspiracy theory. Just imagine that. You put it all together and now you have access to the secrets in committee rooms in Congress. The fact that luckily one of the interns actually picked up the ballots and carried them away.
Right.
So I thought it was kind of appropriate to kind of think about this from the perspective of not the isolated events, but all the knock-on events that are going to happen because of this, and that we don't react incorrectly to you know, throw the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak, when it comes to security and people think through the security profiles and processes and procedures to make sure that their systems are safe, that their applications are safe, and that their businesses and their government and everything else are safe. So another interesting read. I do recommend going back to Steve Gibson's latest episode that came out this week, the week of January 4th through 10th.
Perfect. Yeah, we'll add that into the show notes too. So, yep. You know, come to the website. We always document everything and give you pointers to what we see. And, you know, you can listen and judge for yourself and check them out.
Over at gamesatwork.biz.
Biz. Yes.
And don't just judge for yourself and have your own aha moment. Actually go to trusted sources and learn from facts, please. And once you read the whole article, you'll understand the QAnon reference in there.
Yes, yes, exactly.
So thank you for setting that one up.
bump set.
Need to please.
Bump set. All right, so lots more to talk about. Longtime listeners know that we are all about the AR and the VR stuff. And this next TechCrunch article is about a company called Looking Glass that is using 3D photography, nudge, nudge, for its holographic technology, which seems to be pretty cool to be able to get 3D pictures out of it, doesn't it?
Yeah, this is pretty awesome. And it's funny. We're doing some home renovation or planning it again. And I actually was playing around with the LiDAR on my phone to kind of map out one of the rooms. So we now have very, very powerful 3D input devices in our pockets.
Right.
And so using that to dynamically render 3D output, Looking Glass. I think we may have looked at these guys a couple of years back when they were still in startup mode, because it looks very familiar.
It does.
As you know, the ability to... Do you remember... You remember back in the day when you would get, like, bookmarks, and they used that parallax effect, so you could move them and you'd get the 3D effect of something in it?
Mm-hmm.
To me, I still think a lot of that is similar to what they're doing here, just by looking at some of the video. But it also reminds me of... the Harry Potter movies and the newspapers, right, with the little three-dimensional people moving around in the pictures.
Right. Yeah, it's funny. I had the same reaction there too, Michael. And what's cool about this is that it appears that they're using the standard portrait mode capabilities, which on those of us with Apple products, you get that depth that allows now for that 3D effect to be rendered, right?
Yeah. That's and you get that actually on both sides of the camera, right? So mm-hmm. the front-facing camera has mm-hmm. that in order to do face ID and mapping of your face, and then the back with the LiDAR on the some of the newer larger phones gives you a much more detailed map. So very cool.
Yep. Huh, neat.
So speaking of AR.
Yeah. So speaking of AR. The Metro in Washington, D.C., we were talking about them a little earlier today, has a AR characteristic on the Metro card itself. So what you can do is look at the map of the Metro through AR, through the card that you're holding, and it kind of gives you the map of the subway. So have a look at this, hit the play button, and you can see the Instagram from Metro Forward, the Washington, D.C.
It's really
Metro.
Cool looking. The only thing I was thinking about is, you know, that means I have to pull the card out.
Mm-hmm.
And hold it up with something, like either glasses with an overlay or a phone or whatever.
Yep.
If I want to pull the phone out, why don't I just have the map on my phone?
Yeah.
But it's cool. It does look cool. It looks very cool. Matter of fact, it looks so cool, it reminds me of this next story that you found.
Yes. Well, the next one is around an AR version of an iMac. So, okay, you're probably saying, what? So imagine if... your Mac was fully holographic and your screen size is essentially, it could be infinite even, right? So you could have a display showing up in front of you with windows and tabs and tiles and things right in front of you. You can move them around. And the reason I picked this up, Michael, was not just because that was a cool way of displaying and interacting, but you probably noticed, I'm sure you did, because you have one of these, the keyboard on the mm-hmm. desktop. So it's mm-hmm. like a projected keyboard on the desktop, so you could be typing away on your desktop. Hopefully that sound picked up. And
you did. Good. I'll edit it out later.
No, come on. That was intentional this time. this time. So that you could type on your desktop and interact with this AR macOS operating system. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I actually like this in it, and it really does. I mean, you know, we keep getting closer and closer to the world where what we imagine in movies and what we actually do in real life when it comes to technology interfaces are the same.
Mm-hmm.
Right? When Tom Cruise in Minority Report had the floating screens and swiping things, it was like, oh, that's so futuristic. And I really do like this. If you look at the picture, it's not only an infinitely large screen, but it's also got depth.
Right.
So it's almost like a carousel of his browser and a Finder-like window and then an app screen, right, that you could imagine – you know, moving your hands in a circle to spin the carousel to get to the right window in the front.
Yeah. No, cool stuff, right? I would certainly be down for something like this.
I'd play with it.
Of course, then you'd have to have a clean desk.
Yeah, that doesn't happen.
Which is not highly likely.
This clean desk you're talking about.
But what if you didn't have a clean desk and you didn't have a charger and you wanted to charge your watch or phone or some other device? You know, what would be a good way to do that, in your opinion, Michael?
Well, I don't even say it's my opinion anymore. I think there's a patent related to this. So over at Cult of Mac, they found an Apple patent, I believe, The hand rest on your MacBook Pro, you've got that giant trackpad that's roughly the size of a, you know,
phone.
an iPhone XS Max, right?
Yeah.
Or whatever it was called. And to the right and the left, you've got these spaces that are, you know, a good, what, 8 to 10 centimeters wide?
Mm-hmm.
Or square?
Yeah, easily.
And those spaces right there could be used as Qi charging or MagSafe charging landing pads. And that's what this patent envisions. It envisions having charging coils built into the Mac in those locations where you could put a phone and a watch down on them and let those devices charge. Now, I think this is awesome because when traveling right now, I've got to bring multiple cables. And if I'm lucky, and I think we talked, I can't remember if we talked about this on the show, but I was traveling. I was in Europe. I had the world adapter so I could plug my Mac in. And yeah. Then I was like, I had a 12.9-inch iPad Pro. I had the 7X Max or whatever it was at the time, 7S, the large mm-hmm. one. Mm-hmm. And I had like the first or second gen watch, whatever the right things were at that time. And I was traveling overseas, and I was like, great, I'll just bring the charging cables that plug into the Mac, and then I'll plug the Mac into the wall, and I'll charge everything. And it wouldn't charge. There what? Wasn't enough juice coming through the largest, at the time, MacBook Pro. And when I called Apple about it, they're like, yeah, it's not designed to handle that much power pulling through it. And I'm like, you're telling me your MacBook Pro and your iPad Pro and your phone and these things cannot all charge through that? So this would allow me not to have to bring all those extra cables. In theory, it might be a trickle charge overnight, but it's plugged in overnight, you know, 8 hours.
Should be enough time.
It should be able to charge, you know, your phone and your watch.
Hmm.
I like this idea a lot because it reduces the amount of crap you have to carry when you travel.
Yeah, I remember a colleague of mine had a battery that was like the form factor of the bottom of a MacBook Pro. And that was sort of then the power supply for everything, too. Yeah, so it was big. And you can imagine.
I'm holding up multiple large anchor batteries designed for when I'm traveling. This is a USB-C one. This is a USB-AB one. They currently just sit on my cabinet here in my office. Because
but if you were to travel, you'd be ready to go.
If I were to travel, I could use them. No, because they're probably they've probably completely discharged by now. Stayed there for months.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, so I like this idea too, and I think the idea of power sharing is caring. And the ability to move power around from one device to the next could be really quite positive. And I could imagine that there might be a reverse power capability too. So your phone, which might be fully charged, might be able to not just lend a Wi-Fi connection to your laptop, but maybe give it just enough juice to get that last big presentation emailed over the wireless waves to the destination.
And then you would hear this giant sucking sound as the Mac pulled all the charge out of your
yep. Well, you know, there's other patents in there too. We could do the super low battery mode phone powered MacBook Pro thing. You know, the screen display goes down to black and white, so it's not using all that high level energy for the reds and the blues. Yeah, you know, all that kind of good stuff, right?
By the way, both batteries are still charged.
Way. Really?
Way.
Wow.
Yeah, that's amazing.
That's very amazing. All right. So speaking of other amazing things, for those of us in North Carolina, a little bit of local news here. The Epic Games company, some of you may have heard of a game called Fortnite, maybe something related to that.
Something like that.
Et cetera, I don't know. Are actually buying a mall. Wait, yes. What did I say? They're buying Cary Town Center. They're going to move in and that will
which
be
is
world
almost
headquarters.
A million square feet. I mean, it's a huge mall.
Wait. Got to do it right.
1 million
square feet.
They've been around for 20 years locally. Red Storm, I think, was part of them at one time, or they were connected with Red Storm, which is Tom Clancy's gaming group. The guys over at Virtual Heroes were tied somehow to them with the Unreal stuff. There was a lot of. It's surprising, you know. RTP is actually a pretty big gaming area. If you didn't realize that, it's one of the reasons why I think Michael and I both are interested in gaming, other than we're interested in gaming. But to see the explosive growth that company has had with the Unreal Engine, with Fortnite, with some of their other game properties, they needed to expand, and instead of taking a huge investment that they were going to do to build out a new location,
take an existing footprint that you don't need to now spend more greenhouse gases to construct, right?
Right, and you know, you can imagine with all that amount of space and multiple floors, you could have a really cool open campus, right?
Ample parking,
yes. And don't forget, there's a Starbucks in there, and a
well, and in this
food court,
a post-pandemic space and time, lots of open space, which is good. For ventilation and for
if you got the ventilation,
and to have large gathering spaces too. When you think about it, very intriguing way to repurpose something that otherwise, you know, might have been just knocked down, like South Point was, right?
No, so South Point still exists.
South
Lake.
South. No.
South Bridge. South.
Now I'm forgetting the one in Durham.
Yeah, it was on.
Well, Northgate is gone. That was in Durham. That's gone. And what was the other
one? Was it South Point and the other one Southgate?
No.
I don't know.
Well,
they knocked it down and they put up a Walmart.
Yeah. They put up a parking lot.
Yes.
All right. So,
well, speaking of
trucking right along, or maybe speeding right along, because that's what we're doing through these last few articles that we've got here, is a intriguing way of combining two in one. So, Mario Kart Live, which we've talked about here before, and Lego Super Mario to create a combined video game detailed experience that looks pretty darn amazing. And it's like, okay, how did they do this? Well, there's a environment a website from YouTube and some templates that you can use from Playful to create your own dual structure and take advantage of both of them. This is pretty fun.
We'll let people check that out.
Yeah, we'll let people check that out as we go. Moving along a little bit further, something that I actually stumbled across today was some intriguing new art installation in Terminal B in LaGuardia, which, speaking of battery packs and traveling, haven't been there in a while, but I've been there, and I've actually spent a lot of time in LaGuardia, sometimes not really where I wanted to be. And what's neat here is they have opened up a studio here where you can get a picture taken of yourself that then is rendered onto a really big screen in the form or style of one of the famous Five Points artists, and then have it even emailed to you, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. I also like the fact that, according to the article, in the Bowery Bay shops in Terminal B there, they're also going to have
a Bowery Lego Bay area. In Terminal B.
Yeah, there's a song there, isn't there? There's also a Lego shop there, so I'm excited for that.
Yeah, Terminal B has been, they just reopened it after like massive amount of renovation, if I remember correctly.
Yes, and it's been years in the making, so I mean, I guess it was kind of fortuitous that you had less foot traffic in the while.
Yeah, give them some time to work on it.
So we've done planes, now we're going to do trains, and then we're going to do automobiles. So on the trains, Michael, this Mashable article about putting transparent OLEDs in subways and restaurants seems like a great way of doing some segmentation while allowing for data display, doesn't it?
Yeah, this is actually really interesting. LG's been talking and showing, you know, the concept of a transparent display for some time. And I think they're just looking for ways to use it. And as a use case, this is kind of interesting. As a method, as you say, could use it to separate seated areas in a COVID situation.
Right.
But I also see it as a way to provide interaction with the person, in this case, behind the bar, but give you access to data that you might need. The content might be a little bit more interesting what they would do there. To me, the demo that they're showing looks to be like a digital ordering screen for food service.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, what's really interesting about just the picture in the article is it looks like this whole display could move left and right down a little slide to other people sitting there, or drop down underneath the counter. I think having ideas for what are the right use cases for a transparent display is important. Being able to, as they demonstrate, you know, look out of a train window while you're pulling up data. Again, interesting. I'm trying to figure out what's the data that you would need to do that with, right? If I'm zipping by at 80 miles an hour,
right,
on a train, and I'm trying to read something on the screen, I don't want it transparent. I don't want to see what's behind there because you could get motion sickness.
True.
But there may be stuff that makes sense. I was wondering, you know, what other use cases people would come up with for this. I definitely see the technology being cool and interesting. Going back to the Mac example that we had earlier of the holographic Mac,
mm-hmm.
iMac. So interesting, very interesting, and very cool tech.
Yeah, absolutely. So I see a few use cases too. We'll see where it goes.
But really
so
cool.
So now let's talk about a big screen that is definitely not transparent.
Yes.
The Hyper Screen.
Yes, in the M-Bux.
Yes.
Or
which probably costs Mercedes a few M-Bucks too, doesn't it?
User experience, MBUX, which is... I've driven the 2020 E-Class, and they've got probably a 30-something inch curved display in that, as the instrument panel going all the way over to the infotainment system.
Mm-hmm.
But it's about 8 inches high, right? So it's like that. This is actually using even more space to just provide a completely digital experience for all the instrumentation. Yeah, it makes the 17-inch display in the Tesla look small, right?
Yeah.
And while I find these large panes of glass interesting, it's what is the UX that you're going to put on there to make it, number one, safe.
Yep.
While driving, right?
Yep.
And yes, we're getting eventually to self-driving cars. That'll be less important from a driving perspective, but also safe from the standpoint of if the digital goes out, I need to know speed, I need to know brakes, I need to know fuel, right? All those things that disappear. So what's the analog backup and where do you put that? There's so many interesting things about this story, but as a pure display tech, this looks phenomenal. And I'd really like to see how they integrate things in, like, you know, Android Auto, Apple CarPlay. MBUX is their own proprietary user experience.
Right.
And I can imagine, you know, a little window that opens up that's CarPlay, or a little window that's Android, and everything else is that Mercedes experience for all the display on it.
It'll be intriguing to see. And I was on the safety point.
We'll find out more next week.
I was on the safety point too, Michael. In the article here, it does mention for being able to segment away that if the driver's looking at the passenger who's watching a movie, that it'll lock it out. To avoid distraction. So there's at least that. But my point was there's so much that's tactile and haptic based. So if you're adjusting the temperature or you're adjusting the radio volume or whatever, being able to do that by feel is an important thing. So you're not taking your eyes off the road. And here you would need to know where on said screen the temperature gauge and control was, or you're going to have to say, hey, you're going to have to say everything's verbal.
Yeah,
all right. Yeah. Well, with small amounts of time to go, we've got a couple more things to touch on quickly. this one from The Times in the UK was super intriguing to me. A chatbot to let you speak to relatives beyond the grave. We've actually talked about things like this in the past.
I think we actually talked about this basic concept last summer.
Did. Yep. Well, and we did. And even before that, too, because the whole idea was...
It was basically understanding the data set of a person's experience online to get their voice.
Yes. Right? And this has a little bit more to it where you could input video or you could scan in letters. So then you could have a conversation what might it be like otherwise. Yep. Michael, I know you wanted to talk about this Amazon free podcast.
Yeah, this is really funny. So a couple of months back, we got listed on the Amazon podcast directory.
Yep.
I don't subscribe to Audible, so I've not checked the Amazon directory, but I think we should because Amazon has just discounted all the free podcasts to be only $9 a month now or $8.95. So please go subscribe to us on Amazon so that we can get some of this beautiful Amazon cash because right now our podcast is free and will continue to be free on all services. But if you do subscribe to us via Amazon, let us know. And tell us what they're charging you so that we can go after them.
Because that whatever that money is, ain't coming to us.
It ain't coming to us.
All right. Well, happy 2021. Let's hope for a much better year. And we will join you again next week on gamesatwork.biz. See ya.
You've been listening to gamesatwork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at gamesatwork_biz or at our website at gamesatwork.biz.